Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. I'm very excited about this conversation today. It's a rare one. It's an opportunity for a very unusual exploration of differing viewpoints on a really vital topic of obviously global impact and impact on each one of us and of generations to come. Now, the unfortunate news of today is that Kimberly came down sick during the night and unfortunately won't be able to join us. She sends her love and her really deep appreciation for your participation in this all too rare discussion. This is really one that's very important to her, and she's very sorry to miss it. We'll be catching it on the archive, but meanwhile, she's taking care of herself. So I'm looking forward to diving into this, but before we do, Goa is going to handle the logistics announcements that Kimberly usually handles. So please, Goa, go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Foster. Welcome, everyone. First off, you're being recorded because we make these recordings available as archives for other subscribers. A reminder to register early and test your system as necessary ahead of time to avoid any technical problems. Please leave us comments on the portal page of Thrive Together on what topics you want to cover, and also check in on this area before each event. Please fill out the evaluation form that pops up at the end of the event. We do listen to your feedback, and it is important to us, so thank you for that. Here's a few quick notes on how exactly to participate today. First, use chat for comments and to share resources with each other. And when entering comment or resource in chat, please send to all participants. Q&A is for questions to us. And if you're having any technical issues, please email events@thrivemovement.com. Again, that's events, E-V-E-N-T-S, at thrivemovement.com. That goes to Mitch. And please let him know when your issue is resolved. That will help him out. Now, let me describe the process for participating on the video when we're doing Q&A. This has seemed to be a problem for some people in the past, so let's take a minute to walk through this. After we call your name, I will make you a panelist. Please stay in or go into full screen mode at that point, and you can do that by clicking on the little Three Amigos button, which is in the top right of the video feed that you see right now. When you're in full screen mode, move your cursor to the top center where there's a green box and click on participants, and a participants panel will show up there, and your name will be at the top of the panelist lists. Now, to the right of your name will be a little gray camera icon, and when you click on it, that will become green, and then your video is live. So maybe everybody can try that now. Go to full screen mode by clicking on the Three Amigos button, and then go to the top middle on the green area, click on participants, and see that floating panelist window pop up. Great, so at that point, we're gonna unmute you and you can ask your question. Please be sure that your camera is up and running in advance. Quick reminder that polls will not work for those on mobile devices that are joining us today. We're sorry for that. And a final reminder, please be succinct. 1 minute for questions, 2 minutes for comments. We really want to engage with as many people as possible. So if you keep it succinct, that'll help us out. Thanks very much. Foster, back to you.
Okay, thanks, Goa. So I'm going to take a little bit of time here at the beginning to just set the context and give you a quick review of some of the highlights of the blog in case you didn't get a chance to read it. But really, for context, I want to just put out there for your consideration that whether climate change represents a potential environmental catastrophe or a covert agenda to install and legitimize and fund a totalitarian one world government, either way, this issue is one of life and death and deserves our respectful, rigorous, and honest exploration. And that's why I've spent years researching this. It's why I spent 3 weeks collecting it all into writing the blog, and why we want to spend this time with you today. This is really important stuff. And it's also difficult stuff in a lot of ways. It's difficult to just face some of the realities. And it's also difficult interpersonally. I know that I personally have lost some really treasured relationships over this conversation, at least for now. probably a half a dozen of my friends and colleagues of probably 10 to 20 year friendships have literally disappeared. Oftentimes prior to a public debate or a panel or a workshop or something like that where we were scheduled to appear, when they found out that I was genuinely questioning motives behind some of the climate change propaganda and really calling for a many-sided public debate to get to the truth. Now, at the same time, I've gained many other relationships with people that I dearly respect and treasure for their open-minded and at the same time discerning commitment to discover more truth and to take action accordingly. So let's just ask ourselves for a second, why is this such a charged issue? First of all, it has the kinds of global impact potentially that I mentioned. So of course, you know, it's something that a lot of people really care deeply about. It's important. And at the same time, it's vulnerable socially and it's vulnerable professionally. We'll go into a little bit of that later on. It can be threatening, you know, in terms of losing your job or losing your network or losing your reputation if you challenge the, you know, some of the prevailing beliefs. And I also believe that this atmosphere was intentionally created by the would-be controllers in the same way that they coined the word conspiracy theory in 1964 to challenge any, to like demean anyone who was challenging the official story on the Kennedy assassination. And this same sort of atmosphere has been created around not only conspiracy, but around ETs and around free energy and around vaccines and chemtrails and on and on. I know that everyone on this call deals one way or another with trying to have these challenging conversations with people and at the same time, you know, not lose a treasured relationship. An email that we got recently, you know, since our blog came out, from a dear member of our network, and this person is a very effective activist with a large network themselves, and they were confronted by someone from their network who apparently saw a positive comment to us on our Facebook page about our honoring an open discussion that was going on our blog, respecting many different points of view. And this person was told by the person from their network who wrote in, you know, I've spent my life fighting against this man-made global warming. You know, can I expect that you're actually going to be presenting a skeptical viewpoint on this and sort of implying, you know, are we going to relate together in the future? And so this person who wrote in to us did a really beautiful thing. They sat down and really asked themselves, what's their truth about this type of confrontation, this type of issue inside themselves? And this is what really came through for them that I wanted to share because it's helpful for me, it's helpful for a few other people we shared it with, and I wanted to offer it in hopes that it can be helpful for you. So what came through from this person in their own inner reflection was this: do you seek the truth no matter what, or is your identity so wrapped up in what you have for so long been fighting against that you are actually not interested in new information or perspective or dialogue which could help to synthesize a higher understanding and thus solution? Have your beliefs become your God for the sake of protecting what you think is your identity and your perceived value in the world? If so, how is this any different whatsoever than the structures you are supposedly fighting against? For me, that really hits home, and I think it's an important challenge for each one of us to keep in mind. And so none of us obviously can know for sure all that's really going on about climate change or global politics. If you've been doing a lot of homework on these issues, then please share it with us one way or another on this call, on the blog comments, on our website. And don't be stopped, please, by worrying if others will disagree. It goes with the territory when you're seeking the truth. This is a safe place, and we will honor all genuine perspectives respectfully expressed. Now, if you're new to the topic and you really want to know, then welcome. And thanks for your integrity and curiosity, and I hope this will be really of value to you. If you really don't want to know, and there are many people who don't for one reason or another, well, you probably aren't on this call, so we'll just proceed. We're actually going to start with several polls to get a sense of what you're thinking. And when you respond to these polls, just know that these will record numbers, but not your identities. So, Rob, if you would pull up the polls. So the first question is, what do you think are the main causes of climate change? And you can choose any or all of these that you think are relevant, and then just check on that. And if it's E, other, then hopefully we'll get to discuss those other things later on this call. But A is human pollution, B is the sun, C is geoengineering, D is natural charge cycles in an electric universe. If you're not familiar with that perspective at all, I'll introduce you to it later on. Okay, so please click on whichever ones you find relevant there, and then hit submit. Okay, if you want to be able to see the questions more clearly on your screen, you can click on the little vertical line to the right of the tab that says questions. Click and hold on that and just pull that to the right, and it will shrink the other panels and expand the question itself. Okay, so there are 40% of the people on this call who did not answer. That's almost always entirely people who are on mobile devices and can't participate. So these other numbers would be higher, but they're usually characteristic of the percentages. So 14% think human pollution is one of the main causes, 32% the sun, 32% geoengineering, and 28% natural charge cycles in an electric universe. Also 5% on other, and we look forward to hearing about that later on. Okay, so thank you for responding to that. And Rob, if you could bring up the other poll. Question here is, what sources have you relied upon to educate yourself about climate change? So similarly on this one, choose any or all that apply. Have you been relying on mainstream news? Do you actually go to science journals? Have you been depending mostly on alternative media, or just what you see in social media, or the opinions of friends in your network? Or is it something other? So please check any of those that apply, and again, hit submit. Okay, so again, 26% of people are probably on mobile devices. 19% are counting on the mainstream news, at least as part of their sources. 31% on science journals. That's impressive. I rarely meet people who are actually going to the science journals for that. Thank you for your quest into that. Not necessarily that we can trust the science anymore, but it's a good place to look for primary sources. 69% from the alternative media. Obviously, that's the majority here. 28% on social media, and 21% from friends, 12% on other. Okay, we have one more poll for you. So, Rob, if you could bring that one up. Do you think there is a covert agenda for global governance that is using the idea of catastrophic climate change and popular concern for the environment as a cover? Yes, I do think so. No, I don't think so. It's possible, possibly, or I have not considered this before. So please check one of those and then submit once again. Okay, 57% think that is happening, that there is a covert agenda for global governance that's using this issue as a cover. It doesn't mean that the issue is not real, by the way, but just that whether it is or not, it's being used that way. No one thinks that that's not happening. 17% possibly, and 2% have not considered it before, 24%, a quarter of the people are on mobile devices. By the way, Cisco's working on getting the polls on mobile devices, so hopefully we will have that soon. Okay, so we can close the polls. And let's go back to looking into this topic a little bit. So I hope you had a chance to read the blog, and I'm assuming most of you have, but if you haven't, here is just like an elevator version of some of the things that were covered. First of all, there's some bad news out there in the world that many scientists and politicians say the globe is warming dramatically, and it's caused by human pollution, and if we don't stop it, we will have catastrophic sea level rise, climate collapse, and the end of life as we know it on planet Earth. Now, obviously, that's possible, and it's really important, and it's also important that that we be planning for that kind of catastrophe if we can't stop it, either because it's not human-caused or because not enough willpower can be focused to stop the human causes. So that's an area that really needs to be discussed, and I hardly ever see any discussions of, well, if we're not causing it, or if we can't stop the human cause, what's actually happening in terms of planning for coastal areas? Because that's hundreds of millions of people in coastal areas. Holland, by the way, is below sea level, so they obviously did some key planning a long time ago. All right, then there's some good news in the blog, that a lot of people think that the planet is not warming right now, that it has been warming over the last 200 years, but it's been in what some scientists are calling a pause for about the last 17 and a half years, where it warms and cools, but basically it's kind of flattened off. Another perspective is that the reason why the name global warming needed to be changed to climate change and then to climate disruption and finally to climate collapse was to try to keep some momentum behind the propaganda for getting people enrolled in being afraid of climate change so that they would vote for other things that we'll go into. Also, part of the good news for people who hope that the planet is not warming is that there's significant evidence that a lot of the data was fudged, particularly the hockey stick graph, which it turns out once the Michael Mann, the author of that graph, was forced to turn over his data and his computer algorithms, even random data would spit out a hockey stick graph. And that was, he sued for libel and was beaten in court. And so there's a lot of evidence that at least that part of the evidence was manipulated. Also, that people who are very strong for the anthropogenic global warming that we're causing it, a lot of the scientists, it turns out, have ignored prior warming and just cut off their graphs to not show the medieval warm period and significant periods before that when the planet was significantly warmer than it is now, when obviously people weren't driving around cars or you know, having coal-fired power plants. And another point that is actually encouraging, if we're looking for the for good news about the planet, is that virtually every model that the UN IPCC scientists have come forward with has turned out to be dramatically wrong. Okay, then back to some bad news. Are we being played like we were with the creation of the Federal Reserve, which was created as a sham to try to get people enrolled behind the bankers, or in the 2003 invasion of Iraq when with the fake WMDs, or the installation of the Patriot Act and the NDAA, which followed not too long after that invasion. So we need to be careful. One way, no matter what the data is, we need to be careful that we're not being duped, particularly by the mainstream media and by the bankers and the corporations that really control that media. There's a lot of evidence that's presented in the blog that, unfortunately, when you follow the money on this issue, probably not coincidentally, it goes back to exactly the same suspects, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, the Club of Rome, the UN, Agenda 21, and so forth, exactly the same people and the same agenda that we laid out in Thrive that have taken over agriculture and education and the media and finance itself and virtually every sector, not for our benefit, though that's the way it's always sold, but instead to get us to actually agree to and even promote their global domination agenda. So, thousands of scientists, tens of thousands, have come forward and signed letters saying that they disagree with the anthropogenic global warming, and many of them were actually previously on the UN board. And there have been many threats and bullying of dissident scientists, and we have some brief accounts of many of the victims of that in the blog. So the big piece of bad news, even if it's not warming, is that the propaganda may be being used to create a one-world totalitarian government and to get us to go along with it. And to finish with some good news from the blog, there are things that we can do about the situation. We can get informed. Form others. Do everything we know to do to guard both the sovereignty of nations and of individuals now while transcending the governments into individual liberty. And we can keep our money, the money that's going to be taken in this global carbon tax. If we stop it, we can use that money for much better things like the promotion and protection of free energy devices. And I'll get to that in a minute also. We can encourage the prosecution of both scientific and financial fraud. We can hold individuals liable for pollution. We did a prior Thrive Together event on the power of individual liability and what happens when individuals are not protected by the government or by corporate liability protection and so forth. They change their tune very fast when they're going to be held personally responsible for the lies that are destroying many lives. And finally, we can support and protect the free energy devices being made available to humanity. And a couple of good news items recently you may have seen on our Facebook page. The two most major revelations to the public about free energy that I've ever seen, and I've been in this field for 15 years, have just happened. First of all, Parahamsa Tewari, who we mentioned in our in Thrive, who's had an Overunity device for probably 15 years, and he was the head of energy for India. The government has just come out and said that they're not only going to protect, they're actually going to support the release of that technology, which is running they claim, and I've heard from various sources who've been over there to vet it, it's running about 250% efficiency, which is 100% is 101% is over Unity. You're getting more energy out than you're needing to put in to run the device, and it's running itself. So that's a huge development. And of course, India has aligned with the BRICS countries, and together they have promised already in the past to release all free energy devices that they can. Secondly, I've been following the Keshe Foundation, Mehran Keshe from Iran, a brilliant scientist and physicist engineer who has been promising for years to release free energy devices around the world. And I have not seen any evidence of that for all these years, even though he's a very knowledgeable guy. Whenever the date came when he was going to reveal it, it turned out to be another marketing talk, but no actual devices. Well, that changed a few days ago. And, you know, we can't vet something like that over the phone, on a video, but it looks very promising. It's the kind of demonstration in the public where he's turning on the devices, showing that there's nothing, it's not plugged in anything. But when you plug things into that, it doesn't wind down, which most, motors, generators.
I apologize, everybody. I've lost Foster's video feed and audio feed. Usually that comes back after just a couple seconds, so bear with us and we'll try and get him back. Sorry again, everybody, for the delay here. We've got some technical issues with Foster's video and audio feed. We're working on that. Please be patient. Okay, it looks like Foster's lost his connection, unfortunately. So we're just going to have to take a couple minute break here and work on getting his connection up. Maybe a restart required, not really sure, but we'll be back to you as soon as we know more. Thanks so much. Our apologies. Hello. Hi, everyone. Just wanted to let you know we're having some difficulty with Foster's audio and video connection. And so he's dropped off, and we're working on restoring that connection. Please be patient. We'll be right back with you. Hi, everyone. This is Go again. We're working on restoring Foster's connection, and we've made some improvements, so it shouldn't be too much longer. Please be patient, and we'll be back up in just a couple seconds. Hopefully soon. Thank you. Okay, everybody, we're getting Foster back online. Should be just here in a second. Be right with you. Foster, can you read us?
I am back.
Well, welcome back. Looks like your camera is tilted a little bit up. There we go. Now you're perfect.
Okay. Well, I'm really sorry for that, folks. I do not know what happened. Apparently, it only happened to me. That happens to friends of mine. We're talking about these topics on various radio shows and so forth, but it hasn't happened to me before. It could have been a computer failure on this side, but oftentimes when talking about varying points of view on climate change, or particularly on free energy, which we were talking about when I cut out, these things can happen. But we will press onward. So I don't know exactly when I cut out, but I was just saying that the Keshe Foundation, did I cut out before I was talking about the nature of the Keshe Foundation release a few days ago?
You just started to talk about that. And then.
Okay. The last thing I wanted to say about that was it was a meeting of ambassadors from third world countries, and he was giving free devices plus the blueprints, all the patent blueprints to build the devices to the ambassadors from these countries, as long as they were willing to agree to not just own it and suppress it themselves, but to actually share it with their people. So I hope everything he's saying is true. It's the two of these may be coming out together now, could get enough toothpaste out of the tube that the powers that be will turn and look for a piece of the action instead of stopping it. And I know many, many inventors with fabulous things who, as soon as it's safe, can get them out there. Okay, I want to say a little bit more before opening up to the question and answer. I want to go over a few recent occurrences that have happened since the blog came out, that I haven't covered anyway. And first of all, a few in relation to the anthropogenic global warming. Most of you probably know that the UN Climate Change Conference, COP21, is coming up in just a little over a month in Paris from November 30th to December 11th. And this is could be an absolute game changer in many ways. A lot of people are rooting for the possibility that it'll be finally when the world steps up and takes serious action on climate change. And obviously, there's been a lot of push from world political leaders, from Christian and Muslim groups, from the Pope, from Obama and others. And from that perspective, that would be very exciting. If it were true that humans are causing climate change, that would be exciting to have the world really come together to take action around that. Unfortunately, on the other side, that whether it's true or not, the man named Lord Monckton has really laid out the case very profoundly, and we covered it in the film, that global warming is being used as a way to tap into our genuine concern for the environment to get us to go along with a new global carbon tax that would fund a one world government and the new global laws that would transcend national sovereignty for the first time and install basically a new global governing body. And that, in conjunction with TPP, would pretty much land their long sought after global government in law and with the structure to take taxes from people all over the world, give it to the bankers, and have them be in charge of this one world government. So it could be very chilling either way, but it's one we obviously really need to pay attention to. And it's one of the reasons why we wanted to do this conversation right now. Okay, on the pro AGW side, there have been some leaked information that came out, emails and so forth. It's covered in an article called Exxon's Climate Lies that, from the point of view of the authors, shows that the Exxon scientists had gone to management years ago, decades ago, saying, you know, this global warming is real, it's going to be very destructive, and we should do something about it. And basically management said, well, keep that to yourself, you know, we got a lot of oil to sell, we're continuing with our usual agenda. And that's, you know, it looks like it's very true that those emails were sent, and whatever is going on with global warming, whether they were right in their assessment of it or not, there was obviously very dishonest business shutting down what were trying to be apparently honest scientists, and it's something we really need to pay attention to. The Dalai Lama just came out a few days ago with a video kind of joining the Pope and Obama and many other leaders, as I mentioned, promoting the global legislation at COP21 to curb global warming. Now, I had a chance to meet with the Dalai Lama once, and we actually talked about physics. He's passionate about physics. And so I was curious to see the video, and he actually does acknowledge in the video, he at least mentions the important impact of both the sun and our position in the galaxy, but then he goes on to kind of join the club in relation to COP21. Also, billionaire entrepreneur Richard Branson has just offered a $25 million prize to anyone who can come up with a solution to so-called global warming through geoengineering. Again, I believe that he's sincere about this, and that's great if his point of view is right. If it's not, if more energy and more money goes into geoengineering, which we'll cover in a little bit, to actually get permission to pollute the skies under the guise of global warming, that could be a big mistake. Of course, I believe that they're doing it already. They're just looking for permission when they finally come out and admit it. Okay, on the other side, on the anti-AGW developments these days, the Lord Monckton that I referred to wrote an article recently basically saying that if the Prime Minister Harper in Canada were defeated, that would fundamentally clear the way for the votes to allow world government to win at the UN Paris climate meet. And he said there have been two countries really standing in the way of the one world government. And one of them was Australia, where Prime Minister Abbott was replaced by Turnbull recently. And he very much is in favor of the global legislation to curb global warming. And he said the other one was Canada. Now, that vote has taken place since he wrote that article. Justin Trudeau has replaced Harper. So that could end up being the votes that are needed to basically authorize global government and the global tax and to transcend national sovereignty. Freeman Dyson, who's a famous physicist who was at Princeton at the same time that that Einstein was there, has just come out with an article blasting AGW as, in his words, an agenda-driven perspective on global warming. And in France, where this conference is going to take place, their top meteorologist, a man named Philippe Verdier, on TV station France 2, has just come out with a book, I think the timing is intentional, called Climate Investigation, where basically he's blowing the whistle on what he feels is an artificially created climate hysteria. And of course, as soon as the book came out, he was fired from the TV station. And that's another example of the kind of suppression that's going on of either scientists or media people. Dane Wigington of chemtrail fame has come out with an article recently describing the gag order that's been placed on National Weather Service and NOAA employees. And here's a couple of quotes. Bill Hopkins, the executive vice president of the National Weather Service employees organization, said, "As a taxpayer, I find it highly disturbing that a government agency continues to push gag orders to hide how they operate. This is the work of the American government, owned by the American people, and should be open to the American public." Jeff Ruch, the executive director of Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, said about the gag orders, "The National Weather Service is about the last place where national security style secrecy rules need to be enforced. Everyone is free to talk about the weather except for the people working inside the National Weather Service. Go figure." Because these are people who are looking at satellite pictures every evening of chemtrails all over the world, and they're not allowed to talk about it. Okay, I'm going to leave it at that for now and open it up to your questions, your comments. I am sorry we lost a little time with my internet failure here, but I really want this to be a discussion. We have so much respect for the intelligence and curiosity of our network. Once again, feel free to voice whatever opinion, whatever data you have, and get beyond any concern about, someone will disagree with you for sure. But we all need to just get used to that and be on the same team of going for the truth. And that's what these events are about. So I haven't had a chance to be following the Q&A. So if you could bring someone up to get the conversation started, that would be great.
Sure. Let's start with Charles Bensinger. And Charles, you're unmuted. Again, if you click on the full screen mode, find your name at the top of the list of panelists and click the gray camera icon, and get your camera feed going.
I'm trying to find it, but I don't see the camera icon or my name.
Do you have the panelists list, the participant panel?
Okay, I see it.
At the top of that list should be the list of panelists, and you should be the top of that list.
I see it. Okay. Nothing's happening.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, forgot a step. There we go. Now, click on the gray icon next to it. There we go.
Okay. Great. Yes, if global warming is just a ruse, how do we account for the fact that 2015 is going to be the hottest year on record by far, and 2014 was the second hottest. Also, we just we're in the process of experiencing the largest, most virulent hurricane in the Pacific on record. Plus, we're watching the ice disappear at the North Pole, the glaciers collapsing, and species running north in droves, and ocean acidifying rapidly, and oyster beds in Seattle not able to produce oysters anymore. I mean, the evidence seems fairly overwhelming that we're entering an age of extreme warming and climate catastrophe in many ways.
Well, those are certainly very important pieces of data. But I think it's also important to keep looking at the larger picture. Charles, have you had a chance to read my blog yet?
I have, yes.
Okay, I try to answer a lot of those questions in there. For instance, when you say that 2015 is going to be the hottest year in history, how far does your history go back?
Just as far as our recording. No, it's certainly not the hottest year in terms of Earth's history. We've hit much hotter times in the distant past, but there have never been any humans around then.
Right. So what would have caused those even higher temperatures than we have now?
Well, the scientists think it was volcanoes. They think it was eruptions of methane, those sort of things.
Yeah.
But now we're dealing with CO2 from, our industrial activities, which is a new factor. It was CO2 that caused it in the past, and it's CO2 that's playing a role in the present, according to the scientists.
Yeah. Well, there's some really important things, I think, here that need to be unpacked. First of all, I've been an environmental activist since my early 20s. I'm passionate about it, and I've really been fighting against carbon pollution and nuclear pollution and pesticides and herbicides and fluoride and all these different types of pollution. It's important that we recognize that CO2 itself is not a pollutant. Every time the plants need CO2 to live, we exhale CO2 every time that we breathe. So we need to unpack the actual pollutants that come out of a smokestack, for instance, or out of your exhaust pipe, that are really serious issues. I remember going to Los Angeles for the first time when I was 9 years old, and I got off the plane. By the time I arrived at my destination, I couldn't open my eyes. The smog was so bad. And I know Native Americans up in Alaska whose villages are near coal-fired plants up there, and the asthma rates amongst the children are just totally disastrous. So clearly, pollutants are a serious problem, and I think we should be going after that full speed. And personally, it was one of the reasons why I spend so much time on the free energy issue, because when free energy is actually released to the world and available, not only will the pollution issues go away, but also a lot of the excuses for these imperialistic wars for taking other people's oil and so forth will go away. So I think we need to look and see, okay, pollution is a really serious thing, and temperature, if it really gets out of hand, can be very serious. But is it actually out of hand? And if the planet was considerably warmer at least four different times in history, as revealed by the ice cores, then what could have possibly been warming that? And yes, it might have been volcanoes, but I think we can't ignore the main source of warming of planet Earth, which is the sun. Because there's a lot of evidence that temperature follows sun cycles. In fact, Al Gore won't debate anymore publicly since it was shown that his famous hockey stick graph, where he shows that CO2 and temperature are so correlated. It turns out that they are correlated, but he actually had it backwards. And temperature rises before CO2, oftentimes by up to 80 or 100 years. So how could that possibly be happening? Well, there's a cycle where the sun heats the oceans. The oceans release CO2, and so that follows. And then I do believe that the two of them can get into a feedback cycle that can be dangerous. And I think we really need to be careful how much CO2 is in our atmosphere. But unfortunately, as far as I can tell, there's no actual clear scientific evidence that CO2 is a primary factor, is even a relevant factor in the cycles of warming that has been going on. Now, if it is, we obviously need to cut way back, and we need to be strategic and tactical, you know, in actions about coastal communities and that type of thing. But whether it is or whether it isn't, I think it's really critical. And I wonder what your process has been like. If you entertain the possibility that we're being duped by the agenda, by the global warming agenda, does a belief that we are in fact the cause, without potential evidence, does that keep us from thinking about are we being manipulated into going along with giving, you know, the carbon taxes and the cap and trade, which basically gives the corporations a way to buy them out, because they're the ones with the money. The third world countries and small businesses are the ones who won't be able to develop at the rate that we have. So do you see a potential danger of missing out on the possible agenda by just assuming that we are to blame for this and that therefore we can stop it?
I think we can do an end run around both those agendas with free energy.
Yeah.
Both those arguments become moot. Free energy. If we have the kind of thing you're suggesting, the little black boxes outside people's houses and in cars, then it automatically, renders those arguments meaningless.
Yeah, I agree. And there's a lots of transition renewables in the meantime. I mean, I run my house on solar. You know, one day I will turn that battery shed into a shed for my free energy device, but I don't have it yet. So I really appreciate your concern and your ability to separate the two of those, because I put a tremendous amount of energy into trying to get these free energy devices out. And at the same time, I'm very concerned that within 6 weeks, the humanity might have turned over our sovereignty, our money, and our participation in governance to a one world, basically totalitarian government that is run by the bankers. You know, when they originally set it up, it was actually there was going to be the Rothschild Environmental Bank that was going to be the recipient of all these global taxes. Well, that got too much attention, so they changed it. Now it's the World Bank. Like, okay, now we can trust the World Bank. Anyway, those are some of my thoughts on it. And for those of you who haven't read the blog, please take some time to do it this weekend if you can, because they cover some of the other aspects of this. But this is a great opener with such a critical conversation that none of us have all the answers to.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Charles.
Thanks, Charles.
Who's next? Go on.
Hold on just one second. Looks like Ryan Hannigan. Let me bring him up. Ryan, are you with us?
While he's coming up, I'll read his question out of Q&A. Does your definition of geoengineering also include radio frequency pollution, such as by ionospheric heaters like HARP and ISCAT? I find it interesting that many debunking blogs are immediately dismissive of RF energy and the climate change models. So, Ryan, do we have you with us?
I'll show him active, but I'm not getting any audio from him, unfortunately.
Okay, Ryan, while you're looking for to turn your microphone and your camera on, let me address this. It's a great question. In my definition of geoengineering, it absolutely includes ionospheric heaters. And anybody who wants to look at my article on our website under the environment sector on geoengineering, I go into it there in much more depth. But for anyone who doesn't know, the HARP antenna as an example, is an antenna array, was the largest in the world. I don't know if it still is or not, but up in Alaska. And it was a joint venture of the government and ARCO Oil to create an array that could focus radio frequency energy into a small area of the atmosphere to create various effects. And early on, they actually bragged about it. I haven't been able to find the video. They took it down, but I saw it when it first came out. They actually bragged about being able to bend the jet stream so that it would not come down over the Pacific Northwest, but it would instead come down over the Midwest. They actually had an animation of that. Well, you know, I think that's the polar vortex that we experienced a few years ago. And they can focus a billion volts into one area and create a high pressure area that literally bends up the bottom of the ionosphere. And then when that snaps back down, it creates a very powerful wave. And when those waves go into the Earth, they can use it to look for oil under the Earth. They can look for water reserves. And then if they really jack up the power, they can use it to cause earthquakes. And they've also, that's in the literature. And the guy who actually has the patent on this technology has acknowledged that. And I think that that's been the cause of a number of earthquakes, including the one in Haiti. And also the one other one in the Pacific. I can't remember where that tsunami hit, but before each of those earthquakes and also before the China earthquake a few years ago, there are videos available on YouTube where you see that HARF was jacked up to its highest power levels for a day or two prior to the actual earthquake, and then it was turned off as soon as the earthquake started. Well, that, you know, that would be very suspicious with one, but if that happens, you know, three or more times, I would say there's shenanigans going on there. So there are at least seven or eight of these arrays now around the world, and I think they each represent a violation of all of us, of the air that we breathe, of our safety, and they can be used to project ELF weapons, ELF waves down into areas that can be very destructive to both to health and to, you know, states of mind. So that's a key part of the geoengineering. And if you go to geoengineeringwatch.com, Dane Wigington presents a very compelling case for the fact that global warming is very real, but the geoengineering between HARP, the other antennas, and the chemtrailing and chem bombing, that they're actually either overtly and intentionally or inadvertently trapping more heat in. So, again, very different perspectives on the same type of phenomena, and that's why we want to have discussions like this where we can present it, you know, and look at the data and talk with each other, try to bring some common sense into it to figure out what's going on, because these are huge, unprecedented issues for humanity to deal with. Did we ever get Ryan on?
No, we couldn't raise him. Before we move on, Foster, I've got a question for you in that same vein. I've read a few accounts that HARP may even be being phased out, and they're really utilizing some of these smaller domes, like even the Doppler radar domes and those smaller networks, to do the same kind of effect, but their technology is kind of advanced. Do you have a comment on that?
Well, I have read articles saying that they are in the process of closing HARP down because they said that it was financially inefficient. That they would give up altering the ability to alter the weather, I wouldn't believe for a moment. They use altering of the weather to as a weapon. They use it to manipulate the commodities markets. They actually affect growing in particular climates, and then they, you know, they make bets based on insider manipulation to based on they know they're either going to support or try to collapse a particular growing market. So my guess would be that they have moved on to or in the process of moving on to more efficient ways of doing it.
Okay, before we bring up Bruce Tanner, Rich had put in a comment, and I'll just read it. From David Wilcock, he's learned that all planets in our solar system are warming up. Foster, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mentioned that in the blog too. I believe it's Jupiter and Mars. That have been recorded as warming up. And it certainly made me think twice. I mean, you know, back in the 90s, I was very, very concerned about global warming. You know, frankly, I'm not very concerned about it anymore. I'm not positive, but my leaning is I'm way more concerned about the global governance than I am about that. But if the others, if the other planets are warming in our solar system, then we have to ask ourselves, you know, I don't think that our car exhaust or our power plant exhaust is affecting, you know, Mars or Jupiter. So, it strongly points to the sun. And I think that this is a perfect time actually to bring in Bruce Tanner, because Bruce sent me a video that I had seen, you know, a while ago, but I had forgotten about and didn't include in my blog. And that and some other information coming out of the science world have really started to shed light on the more large-scale cosmic causes of potential warming on Earth. So if we can bring Bruce on, Bruce, if you want to talk about that video.
Okay. Hi. Am I on? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. We can see you. So if you want to talk a little bit about the – I know you had another question, but if you can talk for a moment about your experience of the Henrik Svensmark video, that could be very helpful.
Yeah. There's a scientist named Henrik Svensmark in Denmark, and in the mid-2000s, he and his team did a lot of research. They had already noticed a correlation between historic levels of cosmic rays and cloud cover on the Earth. And they had done a lot of work making that a very viable proposition. But then they did an experiment in which they actually showed the pathways with a very rigorous science experiment that they did in the basement of their building, and they showed that cosmic rays absolutely do create cloud formation nuclei at a low level in the planet, and that's what creates the low level clouds which cool the planet. And they created a scientific paper, and then they hit a wall because they found that they couldn't get that paper published anywhere. And it was quite mysterious, and they couldn't get any reasons from anybody why their paper would not be published. But finally, after 18 months, it was finally published by the Royal Society in England, and it got resounding lack of attention from the scientists, from the scientific world. But it did get the attention of some scientists at CERN, and they had better funding and better facilities, and they wanted to do a duplication of Svensmark's experiment, and they had to fight their management for, I think it was 4 years, to finally get permission to do this experiment, which they did, and they verified Svensmark's work and his results. But they were banned from being able to talk in public about what the implications of this were, particularly vis-a-vis the big climate debate that's going on now, and which there's evidence that it's powerfully controlled by the forces of global governance and the global media as well, which of course are largely owned by a very small group of people. So this work shows that when the solar magnetic field becomes stronger, it keeps cosmic rays out of the entire solar system and fewer cosmic rays reach the Earth. And because there are fewer cosmic rays, there is less low altitude cloud cover, and consequently the Earth warms up. And this was verified by the fact that the solar magnetic field, for reasons no one understands, essentially doubled from the mid-1970s until the late 1990s. And during that time, the planet heated up, which, of course, served the whole IPCC agenda of saying that the global warming was real and it was going to get your mama. But since that time, the field weakened again, and now there is about 18 years of evidence that the planet actually has not heated up significantly. And this leads into my other comment in the Q&A, which is that recently NASA has been caught red-handed massaging the data for historic and current temperatures on the planet, and they have reduced past temperatures just in the last century, and they have heightened the temperatures that we're currently experiencing, and they're cherry-picking data. They almost exclusively do not use possibly the most accurate sources of data on planetary temperature, which are satellite data of both the lower atmosphere and the ionosphere. And they have instead used data from ground-based sources such as ships at sea and temperature stations, which are placed on the ground. And there is evidence to show that they've actually placed some of these stations in places which have factors which make the temperatures higher than they actually are in the vicinity. And also I was going to say that there is powerful evidence that in the 1930s, temperatures were significantly higher in the United States than they are currently. And that is one of the things that has been massaged out of the record by NASA.
Thank you, Bruce. That was a great summary. Let me expand with just one point that I got from the film that you sent. And by the way, we just posted that in chat if you want to check that out after. In that film, there's another scientist that comes on and describes that that when the planet, as it's going around the sun, as the sun is moving around the center of the galaxy, which it does once every 250 million years, when it enters into a spiral arm of the galaxy, there's four spiral arms, when the sun enters into a spiral arm, it gets colder because there's a larger flux of cosmic rays. And then, that causes a larger flux of cosmic rays coming to Earth, and then more low altitude clouds and cooler temperatures, as Bruce was talking about. When our sun moves out of the spiral arm, then the planet starts to get hotter. Our solar system starts to get hotter. So, you know, there are a lot of the environmentalists, a lot of progressives who are super concerned about this are also very interested in the so-called new paradigm. And I ask a lot of people, well, what is the new paradigm? And one of the key elements that people say is, you know, realizing our cosmic oneness. And I am all in favor of that. And I think it's particularly important to bring that new understanding of our interconnectedness and a cosmic perspective to an issue like global warming. And I want to take that one step further to talk about the research. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the work of the Thunderbolts Project. This is the Electric Universe model. And I've been following this for many years, and they're doing fantastic work, and their hypothesis just keeps getting more and more verified and kind of invalidating the gravitational model of cosmic patterning. And so a friend of mine, Richard Moore, wrote an article where he summarizes a lot of the Electric Universe information, and I refer to that in the blog, but I'll also highlight a little bit for you here because it's such critical information. It takes what what Bruce is talking about and goes one step bigger. And basically the model is that the hypothesis is that the universe is 99% plasma. Plasma is like a fourth state of matter that's not liquid, or solid, but it's an in-between state. It's not just a gas either. It's kind of a hypergas. And when an electric current flows through plasma, the plasma responds in quite predictable ways. And more, everything that is being observed by astronomers is making perfect sense if interpreted through the plasma model rather than just the standard model. Now, how does this apply to global warming? Well, one of the key elements is they describe that the solar wind, these waves coming from the sun, come in sheets of current. So they're actually electrical waves coming with associated pressure. And they flow out from the sun's equator. They encounter all of the planets as they're going to the outside of the solar system in our particular, toroidal flow. And then they enter into Earth's atmosphere, into the ionosphere at each of the poles. That accounts for a lot of the northern lights and so forth. And then they exit out the equator. And then surges of current along the filaments will cause spikes in temperature on ours and other planets that are virtually identical to the fractal fluctuations that are seen in Earth's temperature history. Now, if you can give me let me share my screen for a moment. Hold on just a second here. I think I have some pictures. I'll be right with you here. Let me try one more way. I couldn't share it that way. Okay,
you can see that graph.
You can. Okay, great. So this is the Vostok ice core data going back 420,000 years. And so you can see these significant periods of warming going a long way back. But if you kind of stand back and soften your eyes and look at the pattern, it looks, almost like an oscilloscope or something like that. Well, this is what the electric universe has been looking into, one of many things. And this is a picture of an electric discharge in the laboratory. And it's very much what the tail of a comet looks like. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, here we go. Are you seeing now this picture of the stellar nursery?
Yes.
Okay, great. So what the people from Thunderbolts have come to realize is that stars are born, in my opinion, and Nassim Haramein's opinion, as black holes, as vortices that spiral out in the edges of these filaments. So this is a stellar nursery, an example of where the sort of area where stars are born. And this is an artist's rendition of the solar wind itself. So here's the solar wind coming from the sun, going out through the solar system, and then coming in at the poles, and then going out along the equator. But the key here is that for me in looking at this data was to realize if the whole universe is charged plasma. And the particular maxima of charges are the centers of galaxies and supernovas and suns themselves. But they're all connected with these filaments. As sheets of current flow through the cosmos, they affect the sun. They affect the magnetic field of the sun, which affects these currents that are coming out toward the Earth, and those then affect the cloud cover. They affect the temperature. They affect the release, the temperature of the ocean, the release of CO2 on the Earth. And the data is so compelling when you look at the correlation between warming and cooling on the Earth and the sunspot activity and this solar wind activity, that to me, you know, when I look through the scientific method of, you know, creating my own hypothesis and then holding up the various data and seeing, you know, what makes most sense to me, I think that all of these are factors in some global warming, but I think this is by far the most compelling and the most huge scale impact on Earth warming. So Richard, I'll just finish with this. Richard's hypothesis at the end of his paper was basically this. He said the spiky fractal pattern of Earth's climate variation can be accounted for by semi-regular discharge events that occur either on the sun's own current filament or somewhere in the web of filaments to which that filament is connected. So if anybody has any comments on this particular thread, I'd love to entertain that for a moment, because most people have never thought this way at all. And it's a mind blower, and I think a really important one in evaluating the data and what's going on global warming and, you know, what can we or can't we do about it. Okay, I want to give you back the screen here. Okay. Does anyone have any questions or comments on that particular item?
And thanks, Bruce, for coming up. I'm going to move you back down now.
Okay, great. No particular comments on that right now. But let me just open it up again. Anyone who would like to come forward with a comment, with some data, with questions, whatever.
Looks like we did get a comment from Ryan that his mic wasn't connected.
Okay.
Let's have another, let me just read his comment. It is my understanding that a warming atmosphere would hold more moisture, yet we have these very bad droughts out in the West. What is your take on this?
Well, first of all, there's so many mini climates all around the planet that it's really hard to judge warming or cooling. You know, when we're having a drought on the West Coast, and last year they had unprecedented snows and rains, you know, on the East Coast, and unprecedented, you know, in quite a while, rains down in Arizona and Texas and so forth. My own take on the drought in California, because this really, I mean, this is where I live, it really is affecting, you know, our communities just drastically, is that it's a combination of natural cycles that are going on and then a ton of geoengineering. I've been watching really, literally for years when I see on satellite imagery that a low pressure, you know, a cold front bearing lots of moisture is coming in from Asia across the Pacific. And then all of a sudden there are these vortices, these counter-rotating, these vortices that rotate the opposite way of the storm front itself, which is basically unheard of. And oftentimes they come in threes and they'll spiral like crazy, and they will create a high pressure area which dissipates the moisture, and then that moisture, the low pressure, will go either south down to Mexico or up into Canada. And I really believe that that's a lot of the reason for the severity and the length of the drought. And oftentimes before rain is coming in, we will get heavily chemtrailed. It's ironic because I'm sitting here at my desk looking outside, and we had a clear sky this morning. There's been chemtrailing all morning, and now almost the entire sky is hazy, and exactly the same thing happened yesterday after a completely clear blue sky the day before. So so I think that there, oftentimes, you know, the powers that be will create a false flag event or create some phenomena. Oftentimes they'll see one coming and they'll use it. They'll amplify it for their own purposes. And that's my sense of what's going on with the California drought. And one of our Thrive Connect projects is we've been coordinating many of the researchers in the geoengineering area and are working on getting funding to a bunch of them so that they can go forward in tandem with better data and with better investigations into, you know, who is actually flying the planes, where are the chemicals coming from, what chemicals are being dumped, and what's the agenda behind it. It's my biggest daily frustration when I walk outside my house. I look up, you know, over the Pacific Ocean here, and more often than not, it's being streaked by chemtrails. So that's my take. I welcome yours, whoever put that question in, if you have access to a mic at least. Who was that from, Goa?
That was from Ryan, who we tried to bring up.
Oh, okay. So it's still not available. Okay,
right.
Great. Well, let's move on to another one.
Okay. It looks like Mika had a question or a comment, and Sky had a question. Maybe we can bring Mika up, and maybe she could talk about what she wanted to discuss. Okay. Mika, are you with us? Hope I'm saying your name right. Oh, well, maybe not.
I don't see her in the panelist.
Yeah, she's up below you there. Mika.
There she is. Mika, can you hear us?
Well, unfortunately not. Well, she had a comment about she believes that the production of CO2 is a natural process initiated by Mother Earth herself, just as an inflammation is a healing process in the body. It's a pretty good analogy.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of validity to that. If anybody hasn't seen the old slideshow that that Peter Russell did called The Global Brain, he traces the billions of years that it took for the Earth to finally sustain a relatively equilibrious temperature. And once it did, it hasn't, you know, it varies, but it hasn't basically gone out of a fundamental equilibrium that supports life. And I think there are all sorts of mechanisms, just like you're talking about, you know, the Earth goes into a fever or the Earth goes into a chill in order to maintain that temperature, because it's a relatively narrow band that we're depending upon. And so it makes a lot of sense that this planet and others have all sorts of mechanisms to maintain that temperature. I think that's very accurate. She also has another question I saw of what was the other free energy device besides Keshe, and you'll see the link in the Q&A. That's the Paramahamsa Tiwari in India, the over 250% efficiency magnetic motor that he's got running over there.
Okay, so Sky has a question for us. Sky, can you hear us?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was wondering how much of California's water problem has to do with Nestle and other corporations buying up so much of the water and using it. And also, as far as free energy goes, if you have learned any more or thought any more about Hope Girl on the fixed world quantum energy generator?
Sure. Yeah, thank you. First of all, on the quantum energy generator, she just put out a video about a week ago. As far as I can tell, there are literally thousands of people recreating the technology around the planet, which is a great strategy for safe release, but I have yet to see definitive proof of over-unity operation of any of them, and they're not claiming that yet either. So I think that one is still on the bench, but looking hopeful.
Okay.
And in terms of the water, I don't know if you're in California. Are you in California, Sky?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I am, and I've been following the water situation for quite a while. And I've got a fair amount of data on just what you're talking about, that the Bushes and the Rockefellers and the usual suspects have been buying up aquifers all over the planet. And one very wealthy guy in California, who was the major contributor to the political campaign of then Governor Schwarzenegger, and also the guy who owned the chemical companies that were spraying us with toxic chemicals in 2007 that we cover in the film and that we've talked about a lot. This guy was personally responsible for going behind closed doors with supposed political representatives in California and selling out from under us the largest aquifer in California to private interests in Southern California, because they were built, well, for one reason that they acknowledged was that they were building large new developments in the desert outside of Palm Springs and Los Angeles and so forth. And of course, they didn't have any water. So they were buying up aquifers that were developed by taxpayer funds. And then they're buying it up privately with the intent to ship this water down to their new, unsustainable development. So I think it's a huge issue. Now, as I've talked about in many of these events, I believe that we're about to move to a new global financial system that actually is at least some significant percentage asset-backed, rather than just the fiat money created by and controlled by the Federal Reserve. And when I say asset backed, that's not all just, gold and silver and platinum and other precious metals. It also includes corn and soy and water. And a lot of people have talked about, the next wars will be water wars. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that. That particularly as free energy devices come out and there's not nearly the demand for oil for fuel, I think that water is going to be the most precious commodity on the planet. And once again, it comes back to these issues of when you turn water over to the government, then the government is owned by corporate and banking interests. They end up turning over stuff to those very individuals. And so, the wealth not only of finances, but also of resources, gets sucked up into the top 0.001% to the detriment of everyone else. So these are key issues. I think you're right on in your assessment, Sky, and it's a lot of what we're trying to expose in California, but really as a model for the rest of the world, because it's happening all over the place. We've got plenty of water on this planet to sustain actually billions more people if we were to keep it clean and if people were to have access to it. So it's much more an information and a political and financial issue than it is an actual shortage of water.
I was also wondering, when you mentioned earlier the International Conference in Paris coming up at the end of November, is there anything we can do before or after to influence the outcome of that?
Well, that's a great question. I certainly don't know what can be done, in 5 or 6 weeks. But it's a fantastic question. I recommend anyone on this call who's interested, see if you can follow the path of authority. Who is supposedly going to be representing each of you in Paris, and where do they get their authority from? Whether it's from the UN or from the government or from the bankers, and then follow the money to see who those representatives are controlled by. And I guess you could swamp them with emails and faxes and phone calls and so forth. The other thing is that I'm so big on, and I keep mentioning again and again, is this whole personal liability thing. The more we learn about who is foisting this agenda, and I talk a lot about this in the blog. You know, it goes back to the Rockefellers and to Maury Strong, who was their agent, who started the whole notion of global warming and Agenda 21, and back from the 1992 Rio conference, back up through the Clinton Environmental Initiative, and it launched Agenda 21 in this country, and through each of the conferences coming up so far, this guy Maury Strong, his agenda was very clearly to use this issue as created by the Club of Rome. They said that, you know, humanity needs a common enemy if we're to come together, since we don't have, you know, the kind of national enemies that we used to have. So they got together in a meeting. Now, mind you, the Club of Rome was initiated, and it was founded by the Rockefellers, and it involved people like David Rockefeller and Nelson Rockefeller and Maury Strong and Al Gore and Zbigniew Brzezinski and others who have been key architects of the New World Order, of planning the one world government. So they're the ones who decided we needed a common enemy and that global warming was going to be the one. Now, back in the 60s, the planet was cooling, supposedly, and so there was kind of a global cooling scare. And I reprint on the blog a 1973 Time magazine cover that shows that represents this guy, you know, all bundled up and he's freezing. Then things started warming. So they thought, aha, you know, this is the one. We can rally the environmentalists, rally the progressives, rally the socialists behind global warming, and we can get them to go along with transcending national sovereignty with new global laws, transcending national sovereignty with a new global tax. Meanwhile, we'll have the carbon trade. We'll have the carbon tax. We'll have cap and trade, all of which will further centralize, you know, wealth and power amongst the elite to the detriment of small corporations and developing countries. And boy, you know, that'll work out just right. And that's the, you know, if you think that's conspiracy, you got some homework to do, because you follow the money, it's all there. You follow it in every sector. Now you follow it in relation to climate change, and whether climate change is real or not, I personally have no doubt that this has been the agenda of those type of people to dupe very caring environmental activists into actually browbeating their friends into giving up their sovereignty, giving up their authority, giving up their money to a one-world totalitarian state. And they could be, at least legally, structurally, they could be 6 weeks away from that. And that sends chills up my spine. So, you know, at the end of the blog, I have general suggestions about, you know, what one can do to get informed, to help inform other people, to get public debates going in your network, in your region, and to appeal to your representatives, whoever they might be. So if anybody has any other suggestions about what we can do in terms of COP 21, one way or the other, or about anything else related to climate change, please drop those into chat. And that way other people will be able to see them, and we can collect them at the end, and we can post them on our event page, which will go up with the archive of this call.
Great. Thank you, Sky. Okay, I think Grant H. has a question. Let me bring that person up. Okay, Grant, you're unmuted and activated your camera. Are you with us?
I am here. Let's see. There we go. Hi there.
Hello.
Okay, cool.
Hi, Grant. Welcome.
Hi, thanks so much. I so appreciate the work you're doing, fostering, creating a, a healthy dialogue around this. I was following up on your discussion earlier about the California drought and following this bigger picture, who would benefit from disrupting us in California from actually getting precipitation. Some of these other larger themes I'm following with you, but I couldn't quite make the connection between drought and this larger connection to climate change and global governance and dominance.
Yeah.
I don't know if I just missed that link or not, but that's something that I wasn't quite able to make a connection to.
No, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked it because there are many threads that go off of this, and it'd be useful to explore a few more. Also, following up on Sky's question a minute ago, when pretty drastic cutbacks were imposed on us on water use in California, the only people who were not subject to those cutbacks were the big ag companies. And so once again, they get the benefit. The small farm, I mean, there are farmers in the Central Valley here going out of business like crazy because they're not getting the subsidies and they're having to cut back. So that's one thread. Then there is the elite who want to control people's lives. They want to do it through finance. They want to control food, as we went into in the movie. And another way to control food is to not only do the GMOs and get the small farmers out of business, but then control the climate as well. And they, okay. As I mentioned, if they can control the futures markets on these agricultural commodities, they make a ton of money, and they can also threaten either countries or farmers who aren't going along with their GMO programs or the subsidies or whatever it is. So it really goes back to those who would want to manipulate reality to control profits, but even beyond that, to control people's lives.
Got it. Excellent. Well, I had one follow-up, if I might.
Sure.
I'm curious, so much of this climate change debate toggles between a left-right,
yes,
conservative versus liberal argument. And what your work has sort of opened my eyes to is the fact that this kind of global domination agenda transcends the tragic comedy that we see unfold every night on the news and so on. Is there a way or any tips that you might offer to remove this incredibly important debate from the clutches of a simple right-left argument that seems to be where where it takes place? Because the irony is I'm thinking in my own family when I think of conservative, my most conservative, staunchest Republican people, they're convinced that this is all about Obama and that this is a liberal thing that's being foisted upon them. But yet what you're pointing to is something that transcends both parties and is really not as simple as let's entrench ourselves in the left-right divide, but rather recognize that there is a global elite that's pulling the strings on each side. So I was just curious if you had any thoughts on good ways to, because so much of this really should, what's ironic, I guess, is that so many of the conservatives really are the freedom-loving people, theoretically, right?
Yeah.
Yet this agenda is not being foisted on by the liberals or the Democrats. It's a global power elite that's really pulling the strings on both sides.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's a way there to sort of transcend that dialectic such that we might actually get traction from both sides, both people pointing to the kind of both the sustainable world we want to grow and the fact that we're all freedom loving people, that there is a common thread here, which of course Thrive is underscoring.
Well, it feels so good to me to hear your insights on that. And if we played a role in your understanding that, then that's very nurturing, and I'll pass that on to Kimberly and the rest of the team as well, because We work hard to try to address this exact question. And I have, you know, many, many friends on the left and many, many friends on the right and libertarian friends and voluntarist anarchic friends. As Kimberly and I traveled around to more than 50 cities when the film first came out, and also with Solutions Summit workshops, people would stand up and cheer when we would try to make the point that the solutions that we're suggesting are not political solutions. They're not based on politics. They're based on principle. And that, to me, is the major shift of the new paradigm. You know, discover truth and then design your solutions based on the truth of the way reality is. Because the universe is this phenomenal, alive system which sustains healthy systems as long as we don't violate the natural flow of energy. And that comes back to the Taurus, whether it's a new energy system or whether it's a whole seed or a whole ecosystem or a whole bank or a whole financial system of voluntary free trade and honest money and all that kind of thing. What's going to transcend the right-left dialectic to me is finding, is doing our work ourselves on what is true, what is natural, rather than what's popular. And then having the courage to spread that to our friends and our networks and to the public. And then I think we're all finding each other. And that's a lot of what the Thrive Network is it's not a gathering of liberals or a gathering of conservatives or libertarians. It's a gathering of people with who are ready emotionally and intellectually to confront a lot of the truth, because to us that's what informs effective, viable solutions. So as you can imagine, Kimberly and I deal on a daily basis with trying to have those challenging conversations with friends and people that we meet that always carry the risk of offending people or losing friendships or them writing us off. You know, we've had people following us for 3 or 4 years, you know, real fans and so forth. And we say one thing that they don't agree with on Facebook, like, oh, I knew it. I'm out of here. You know, and, you know, if that's the truth for them, then fine. Then they're actually not ready to continue this conversation. But more and more people are. And one of the main things that we have learned is guide the conversation as much as possible with questions.
Right.
Rather than trying to download our ultimate wisdom down people's throats to get them to see our, you know, all-knowing point of view, you've all found this doesn't work. It only sends people away and destroys your credibility and so forth. The key is to get on the same team with them, and that's what a question does. And so I finished this last blog with a series of questions that I recommended to people to try and transform the difficult conversations that you're having. So you do get on the same team with someone, though you may not agree on the data, then the two of you looking for the truth about, you know, the evidence and the common sense to create actual viable, sustainable solutions, rather than I'm right or you're right, and if you disagree with me, I don't want to talk to you anymore. So let me just give a couple of examples of some of the questions that I suggested. The first one was, why is there no live mainstream debate about global warming and climate change or climate collapse? I mean, it's stunning. Why isn't, I was really happy to see just recently that Bill McKibben did have a debate with Alex Epstein that was very friendly. They didn't agree on much, but it was a really useful debate for people who are watching. I learned a lot from both sides of that. But the notion that there isn't one, that we're not having, you know, at least on PBS, if not mainstream, why aren't we having publicized debates with the best and most eloquent experts from all the different sides? Well, it would obviously be happening if there weren't agendas to keep that from happening. And that goes back to the profits, to the advertisers, to control. So another question that I suggested is, isn't it important to solve atmospheric pollution regardless of whether it's a major factor in warming or cooling? And that, you know, well, I find I can get on the same page with almost everyone with that. And then we can actually talk about, okay, well, how can we actually solve pollution? You know, I mentioned that when I was 9 years old, I could hardly see when I arrived in Los Angeles for the first time. And now it's not the case at all. There's been dramatic improvement in Los Angeles and many other cities around the world. Obviously, in places like, you know, Beijing, they desperately need these new energy technologies and renewables and so forth. And that's why we've been contacted by people from China, people from Hong Kong, other places that are really suffering, who really want to need these technologies and want to get them out there. And some of the other questions that have already come up in the discussion today is, if other planets are warming, then what? We're not causing that. So what is? If there have been warmer periods in the past, then our pollution hasn't caused that. So, you know, so what is? So it takes a lot of discipline to actually not try to just claim the right answer to that, but actually be in an open discussion for a while.
Right.
What have you found has been helpful with people that you talk to?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because, you know, whenever I get into these charged debates, I follow on with your recommendation to adopt common principles, or find common ground around shared principles. I call it the 3 P's approach. So I start with principles to say, okay, where is the bottom line that we can agree on? And then from there, then we can talk about what policies can be aligned with those principles, so that we're all in integrity. You know, we can all follow our shared truth around certain principles being true. And then at the very end, kind of the tail wagging the dog, as we see in politics, is the people involved. So principles cascade to policies, cascade to the actual people in play, because they're interchangeable. They can move in and move out, but principles are something we can lean on and agree to. So we're thinking very much alike around that, and that's generally what just diffuses the most, challenging conversations out there. And I found some help with it, but again, a lot of this gets amped up again to be a left-right debate, and people are conflating certain beliefs with others, and it's not very helpful. And I think coming back to shared principles is a good place to start. So thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, I've just finished writing a blog that'll come out in the next few weeks, and it's called "Defining Politics," and it's really trying to get to the root of what is this politics thing. There's a lot of debate about socialism now, and I've been interviewing a lot of people. Well, what's your working definition of socialism? And almost no one has. They have a sense of it. Oh, that's when the government actually takes care of the people or something like that. But most people have no actual working definition of socialism or republic or democracy or tyranny or totalitarianism or fascism and so forth. So we're really going into that, particularly in this election season in the U.S. It's up. And if we don't understand those terms, then we can get ourselves into a lot of trouble. So that will be coming out, but we'll also be doing one of these very Thrive Together events on this question of that you brought up, of how can we, you know, I want to hear from people what their challenges are in having difficult conversations, what they're finding is working, what's not working, and we'll share more of what we're doing along that line as well. But I want to go back for one more minute, and while we're on this, to the I like this breakdown of people and principles, policy, and people. And anybody who's been around Thrive for a while knows that I'm really passionate about the liberty perspective and about equal and individual rights for everyone on the planet. And that no one would get any rights that other people don't have. And everybody would have to be as accountable as everyone else, because part of the problem in that 3 P's approach is that we're still in a system, unfortunately, where you look at the principles supposedly, and then it translates into policy. Well, what's policy? Policy is usually whoever's in power gets to inflict it over, like, up to 49% of the other people. And that's not really a sustainable way of going. So what's the problem with that? And I think the problem is, as soon as you get into politics, which is just the business of making policy, you've already violated the first principle, which is you're stealing people's money in order to impose your policies and to keep yourself in power. So that we'll be doing a number of events and blogs coming up, because Kimberly and I are working on a book on the whole liberty perspective that breaks it down into these very issues and very practical things about how freedom really works, how it's being suppressed, you know, how it could work in future civilizations and so forth. So, you know, look for that upcoming. I won't go any deeper into it now, but thanks for bringing all this up.
You bet. Well, I'm right over the hill in Silicon Valley from you, so keep up the good work.
Oh, great. Well, I look forward to meeting you in person someday.
So, okay. Thanks. Thanks, Foster.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Grant. Okay, I think we might have time for one more. I'd like to bring up Dave Munson. There's a question about CO2 levels. So give me one second to bring it. Oh, and Dave looks like he's only dialing in. So we're just going to have audio from Dave. And Dave, are you with us?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
And Goa, while we're doing this, could you also bring up, just get available the event flyer for the cannabis event so we can mention that, show it to people before we have to close?
Sure.
Okay. Welcome, Dave. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted your comment on a couple of things. Two things surprised me when I did a little research on this subject. One is just how small the component of CO2 is in our atmosphere. And I wrote that in my question. And I think that's hardly ever mentioned. And if people knew how small it was, kind of common sense would say it is very unlikely to be a cause of global warming.
I don't have your question in front of me. Last I remember, it's under 3%, right?
Carbon dioxide?
Yeah.
From what I've read in just looking at Wikipedia, it's 0.05%.
Oh, wow. Even lower than I thought. Okay, thank you.
Well, and I think it's lower than almost everybody thinks. I think it's never brought up. And basically, you know, it's talked about in parts per million, but if you break it down, it's such a small component of the atmosphere, and the rise is only 0.01%, according to the figures of the total composition of the atmosphere. It just seems like it's highly unlikely to have any effect, just common sense wise, without any of the other data.
Yeah.
And the other thing, when I was doing some research, also it was saying that there is a correlation between CO2 and warming, but it's the reverse of what everybody thinks. If you look at long term, the CO2 levels actually rise and fall after the rise and fall of temperatures, with an offset of, you know, hundreds of years, and you have to kind of look at it long term. So that would suggest it can't possibly be a cause. It may be an effect, but the correlation is not what's being presented. So
I think that's when Al Gore stopped kind of doing public appearances on this subject, because that was a big oops in his graph. Now, at the same time, some scientist friends of mine who agree with that also say that there is a feedback effect, that once the oceans start warming, it starts releasing more CO2, which can also add to warming. Whether or not and how significant the warming is, I don't know. But I do acknowledge a feedback effect between the two that we need to watch out for.
Foster, okay. Let me ask you about methane production. And I've heard some vegetarians and vegans make the case that, you know, cattle production is adding a great amount of methane to the environment, and that's part of the ecosystem here.
Yeah, it's a huge part of whatever warming is human caused, is the methane that's released by these big beef farms. I drove back from Los Angeles last weekend, and there's a place that you pass through on Route 5 where for about 10 minutes you just want to hold your nose. I mean, it's just almost unbearable, the level of methane cloud that you're going through because of all these basically butcher farms that are surrounding the freeway there. So I mean, I personally am a vegetarian. I don't try to impose that on anyone. I know there's some people for whom that doesn't work, and there's certainly some cultures like the Native Americans up in Alaska who, you know, have to depend on seal and caribou in the winter or something like that. But to whatever degree people can combine the ethics of not killing animals for the pleasure of a particular taste, if it works for you nutritionally, it can also really help lower the CO2 in the atmosphere. Now, that for me, the bigger methane issue is that, from my research, I think it is true that if the poles were to warm to a certain extent, and the permafrost were to melt and start releasing vast amounts of methane, that could be, it would be huge amounts of methane that could also go into kind of a feedback loop, and be very dangerous. And that was one of the things that I was most afraid of. And I continue to watch it carefully. I watch the expansion and contraction of the poles a lot, and I go into that in the in the blog, because there's a lot of varying data on it. But I in recent years have been very relieved at certain expansions on the ice I believe it's in the Antarctic especially, and I don't see levels of warming that I've been told would get close to the kind of methane releases that I'm very concerned about.
Great, thank you.
Now, we're just about out of time. We just had about 5 minutes left. If there's anyone who has some data that's been particularly compelling to them about the danger of human-caused global warming, I really value that tremendously, and everybody can benefit from it. So if there's anyone who wants to come forward with any of that I didn't cover in the blog itself, I welcome you. And also I put references in there that I have found to be really valuable, both pro AGW and anti, you know, skeptic AGW. So if you're really interested in this issue, there's a lot for you to look into in the hyperlinks and in the resources at the end. So anyone, want to come forward with any of that data?
I don't see much more come in the chat.
Yeah, Nina wrote in and said, what's the TPP effect on all of this? It's a very interesting dynamic that I certainly don't understand very much yet. But if TPP is passed and there's not a global revolution in relation to it, then basically it's another way in which national and individual sovereignty will have been transcended. And the global laws on the environment, non-trade, and so forth will be made by the major corporations, and any violations adjudicated in special new courts created by the global corporations. And remember, they control the governments and the banks control them. So we're really talking about that's what the one world government looks like, when you've got the bankers running both legally and financially, having control over everyone's life on the planet. So it's equally as concerning to me as the potential for a global legislation, a carbon legislation. And this also hooks in with the whole smart grid. And I noticed things changing a little bit. Am I still on going?
Sorry about that. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, great. It hooks in with the whole smart grid too. If the would-be controllers get to do their global domination agenda, they will have a one-world currency based on carbon, monitored by the smart grid and the surveillance devices within your home that hook in and transmit through the smart grid, and then they will be doling out your energy. You know, what you get to use to live every day, according to how well you go along with their program. So it all fits. As bizarre as it may sound for anyone who's new to conspiracy analysis, once you stand back and look at it, it's a brilliant diabolical, shrewd plan to control everybody's life. You know, in our solutions hub, we cover all 12 sectors, and we've got over 1,000 groups around the world working on all different sectors. And we did that very intentionally to have a whole system approach to solutions. Well, the globalists have taken a very shrewd and comprehensive whole system approach to the domination of the world. So they're using a very similar sector model. It's just that they're doing it non-transparently, and they're doing it deceptively for domination through coercion. And we're doing it transparently through the promoting the sovereignty of every individual and the accountability of every individual for violating anyone else. You know, and I was talking with Grant before about if you got policies out of the picture, then you've got principles and you've got people. There would still be courts, dispute resolution organizations that would resolve conflicts having to do with environmental destruction or causing other people to be sick through being exposed to toxins and all that. There would be courts all over the world to resolve these things, but the courts would be based on the principle of non-violation rather than on government subsidized corporate liability protection or the corporation's ability to make their own laws. So anybody who was violating other people through environmental offense would be personally liable. So if you're running a corporation that is generating energy, if for some reason you're still exploding things and burning things, you know, through nuclear or coal or whatever to generate your energy, you're going to be 100% responsible for cleaning that energy and making it safe. So first of all, you wouldn't even have a nuclear plant because no one but governments will ensure that right now, because the risk of violation is so great that it really shouldn't be on the surface of the planet. And in terms of coal, there are more and better devices that are cleaning coal. I don't know if any of them will ever get 100% effective, but in the meantime, at the very least, you would need to put on your factory every cleaning device that was effective, and that would raise your prices. So people would actually have to pay more for energy, and that would make people more aware of the true cost. You know, the cost of polluting would not be externalized anymore. It'd have to be internalized to a corporation, passed on to the customers, or cut out of, you know, CEO bonuses and so forth, such that we have to be dealing with the reality of pollution. Because for a while, we're still going to have pollution. But we can, if we're all in it together through natural pricing mechanisms, we can mitigate that until with the renewables and the free energy, it won't even be an issue anymore. Okay, so that's my little rant on how freedom applies to the TPP, the smart grid, and climate change. So I think we're going to need to finish with that, because I know people make appointments for after this. So I really am grateful. Once again, I express for Kimberly her regrets at not being able to participate in this, but I know she'll be watching the archive and sends her love to everyone. So thank you to Mitch and to Rob and to Goa, the team that's working behind the scenes to have all this run smoothly. Sorry for the delay when whatever it was cut me out for a few minutes. And we really look forward to the next one. Goa, if you could bring up the flyer for the next event. Our next event is on healing with cannabis. We're going to go into questions like, are there specific types of cancer or types of people that respond better than others? How does it work? What are the legal issues involved? And we're going to be having guest experts from around the country who know a heck of a lot more about this than I do, and even more than Kimberly, who's researched this a tremendous amount. So that should be a lively discussion. We've got a number of friends who have been involved in getting both pain relief and medical healing from various forms of CBD oil and the rest. It's a obviously rapidly emerging topic as cannabis is getting decriminalized around this country and around the world. So that should be a rousing one. Please tell your friends and join us for that. So let's open up the microphones for a minute so you can have a chance to say goodbye to each other. Thank you all, and we will see you on, what was the date of that again? I don't remember. November 14th, 12 to noon Pacific time. Thank you, everyone. Have a great weekend.
I just also wanted to say that chat today was really robust, so thanks, everybody, for contributing there.
Okay.
Well, goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you.
I'm trying to call him off on my phone.
You're 23.
You have a good old time, you.
Bye, Kristen. Sonia.
Enjoy.
Thank you so much.
You and Kimberly. You're welcome.
Good work. See everybody.
Bye. Bye, Jeanette.
Call Grandma and Grandpa real quick.
Bye, y'all.
And finally, a webinar that makes sense.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to you all.
Okay.
Thank you, Golem. We need to close now.
Okay.
Good. We're gone.